Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell.
Welcome back, everyone, to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Show. And we are back for part two of our fantasy football draft special series. So if you haven't listened to part number one, you might want to go back and start there. In this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit more strategy. We're going to be discussing quarterback strategy, tight end strategy, and bench strategy. How to approach these positions and your bench. Let's go ahead, Seth, and kick it off with quarterbacks. We're going to talk about one quarterback strategy first. We'll also talk about everyone for two quarterback leagues. We are big two quarterback league proponents. We will give our strategy for two quarterback leagues first, and then we'll move on to tight ends. So for one quarterback leagues, typically, since there is so many quarterbacks, it is common that everyone is mostly, what, Seth? Waiting on quarterbacks, right?
Yep.
So I guess that would be basically our general strategy for quarterbacks. I don't think there's anything fancy here, but give us an additional breakdown of maybe when and where of how long you might want to wait.
I think the point at which I would want to jump in and grab a quarterback would probably be, you know, the 10th round where there's Philip Rivers, Big Ben, Jared Goff, somewhere in there. I think Philip Rivers is one of the more overlooked quarterbacks, one of the more underrated quarterbacks, second in the league last year in passing yards. He's got a ton of weapons to work with. He pretty much does it every single year, year in and year out. So I like Philip Rivers in the 10th round. I think that's a good spot, him or Big Ben. You can't go wrong with either one. I think where I would draw the line is, you know, ideally I don't want to end up in a situation where my number one quarterback, even in a one quarterback league, is a Marcus Mariota, Alex Smith, Eli Manning, even Dak Prescott, that type of thing.
Okay, I'm going to throw out a bold idea for you. Okay,
let's hear it.
Not a hot take in terms of being ridiculous, but an actual serious, bold idea. How about in a one quarterback league, and neither of you of us play in one. We like two quarterback leagues a lot more. It actually puts a lot of meaning towards that position and a lot more strategy, which we like. What if I did not draft a quarterback in a one quarterback league until my last pick? What does my scenario look like? So say I'm in a 12 team league. And not everyone's going to draft two, but let's just say worst-case scenario, all 11 teams draft two quarterbacks. That's 22 quarterbacks off the board.
Then you're in a situation where you're going to be looking at Case Keenum, Mitch Trubisky, Tyrod Taylor, Andy Dalton, you know, Flacco, Darnold, Baker Mayfield, that type of situation. Would you be so you're basically – you'd be content with Case Keenum, Trubisky, Tyrod Taylor as your starter going into the season because you can always stream quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, I mean, the idea there is that I'm not held to Case Keenum all year. I don't really particularly like that one, but Mitch Trubisky, Bears offense, okay, if he falls, that's great. He's what, coming off the board as the 24th quarterback. Tyrod Taylor slash Baker Mayfield, okay. Andy Dalton, maybe bounce back. I mean, I should be able to, by just playing what defenses, how well defenses are playing, stream against them and probably get a top, I don't know, 15 quarterback play would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit extreme, but what I do think is realistic is, let's say the other 11 teams all take a quarterback, obviously, and then half of them, we'll say five of them, take a second quarterback. Because a lot of people in a one quarterback league aren't going to draft another quarterback to put on their bench because they know they can stream quarterbacks. So then you'd be looking, that changes your outlook. You'd be looking at, you know, Pat Mahomes, Marcus Mariota, Alex Smith, Derek Carr, Eli Manning, Dak Prescott, Jameis Winston. That opens it up a little bit more. So if you were waiting to your last pick, you could grab one of them and also have the opportunity, you know, knowing that Tyrod Taylor, Mitch Trubisky, Case Keenum are available on the waivers. I think I could stomach that. I don't think I could go in if all those other quarterbacks are taken And granted, like that's like we've already said, very unlikely that all the other 11 teams would have two quarterbacks. I don't think I could go into the season with Case Keenum or Trubisky as my lone starting quarterback, because that means that there's not really any other quarterbacks that on waivers. You have the Sam Darnold that would be on waivers, Joe Flacco, but I think in a one quarterback league, you don't want to overdraft quarterbacks. You do want to wait. But I'm also looking for quarterbacks that have week in and week out upside to put up big weeks, which is why I'm fine taking a Big Ben or a Phillip Rivers in the 10th round, considering the other players that are going to be available to me, and knowing that Phillip Rivers and Big Ben are going to throw for a lot of yards and are going to have those weeks where they put up 3 to 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, I still think that I am really intrigued and want to join a one quarterback league just to do this, because I don't think there's really that much. Like, yeah, Phillip Rivers does perennially finish as like a top 12 quarterback, but usually it's like between 9 and 12. I can probably stream that production very close on most weeks. And to your point, not everyone is going to be drafting a second quarterback. Typically in a 10-man league, you know, you might get 17 quarterbacks. So you might be looking at around the Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota level. So you still have Derek Carr, Alex Smith, Eli Manning. In a 12-man league, you might have 18 to 20 quarterbacks going off the board. I would take someone with, you know, pick 15, 16 right before you take your kicker and defense, of course. So my guess is you probably would end up with someone like an Alex Smith, Derek Carr, maybe Eli. Of course, you've got the Mitch Trubisky, Andy Dalton. You got Jameis Winston, who's coming off the board as a 26th quarterback, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. Jameis Winston.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're going to go the route that you want to take, wait till the very, very, very end. You have to monitor what's happening with Derek Carr, Eli Manning, Alex Smith, and Mariota, because that's I'm fine riding with one of those guys as my only quarterback in a one quarterback league. But again, I would not want to be in a situation where I'm going with Case Keenum. I mean, Case Keenum, if you just take Phillip Rivers in the 10th round, Phillip Rivers had 1,000 more passing yards last year than Case Keenum. Case Keenum had a career year and was on a much better offense than he finds himself in Denver now. So, granted, we're just picking on Case Keenum there. You could go with Trubisky. Trubisky's also on a questionable offense and really hasn't proven anything in the NFL. So I would just be a little bit sketched out going with one of those guys as my only quarterback. And then Tyrod Taylor might not keep his job. And the idea is also that there are going to be these quarterbacks available on the waiver wire. But I think there is, you know, you don't want to waste an early pick on a quarterback, but you also, it's nice to have a quarterback and not have to worry about that position, not have to worry about wasting the effort streaming every week, not have to worry about wasting a bench spot and so forth.
I'm not overly worried about it. If they're on waivers and, you know, they're there, then you put in your waiver claim and you get it done. Week in and week out. And obviously Case Keenum, he's going behind Jameis Winston, so he would be obviously less attractive than several other people. But I do like Mitch Trubisky. I do think I could go into the year with him, depending on what his schedule looks like, and that's going to be one of the episodes we talk about. Trubisky last year had a touchdown rate of 2.1. 2.1. You might want to say like an average touchdown rate is between 4 and 5. Anything above 5 is good. Tom Brady's average is 5.5% over his career. And Mr. Trubisky ranked 28th in the league. He was on pace last year for 9 touchdowns in 12 games. Mr. Trubisky. That's terrible. That's John Fox. That's the John Fox offense. If he had just a 5.5% touchdown rate over the course of the season, projected out, he would have finished with 24 touchdowns instead of 9. Just that difference in touchdown rate. And I think Matt Nagy is going to kind of bring that type of creativity. They have more weapons in Chicago. You know, I bring up Chicago a lot. I like Chicago. But I'm okay waiting. I'm really content. And to your point, I probably would monitor those 4 or 5 quarterbacks. And as long as all 4 or 5 are on the board, I'd wait another round. And as long as all 4 or 5 are still available on the board, I'd wait another round. And I just keep doing that until maybe I have to force my hand and grab a Derek Carr, Alex Smith, Eli Manning scenarios where I at least feel a little bit more comfortable. But a 2.1% touchdown rate last year for Mitch Trubisky was the exact same range that both Jared Goff and Carson Wentz had their rookie year. And we obviously know what happened their sophomore year once they got a competent offensive coach there.
This is why I disagree with that strategy. Not saying that it couldn't work, because Trubisky, like you said, could have a big turnaround, could make the big jump in his second season. He's got a better coach. I get all that. But when you look at the other players that are going in the 10th round, and you have DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, Cameron Meredith, Gio Bernard, Sterling Shepard, Calvin Benjamin, we're talking about bench players, players that you probably don't want starting for you. And every position counts. So to me, instead of grabbing somebody that's going to ride the pine and sit on my bench that I'm probably not going to use unless there's an injury or bye week, etc., give me somebody like a Phillip Rivers or a Big Ben at the very least, who can come in there and hold that position down and really get me points instead of, you know, grasping at straws. I just don't think it's worth taking some of these bums in the 10th or 11th round just to, you know, wait it out on quarterbacks even further. I think the 10th, 11th round is waiting a long time.
Yeah, I think when you say it like that, it makes perfect sense, right? And I think everyone listening to this episode would totally agree with you. And I said it's a bold move because it's not something that's conventional, right? But let's be progressive and let's think about this. We have nearly 30 startable quarterbacks. Last year we saw Alex Smith, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Blake Bortles all go undrafted and have awesome years. And if you look at a value above replacement level, you know, a lot of these players like a Derek Carr, a Mitch Trubisky, who I have rated probably higher than most people, but I have Trubisky and Alex Smith very close to a lot of these people in terms of value above replacement. They're on a week-in, week-out basis, they're not doing much worse. So I think the production is, because they're guaranteed starters, they're going to be touching the ball, the quarterback that is, that's a lot more of a sure thing to try and find if they're assuming that all these quarterbacks are actually on waivers and, you know, they're still starting, versus these wide receivers and running backs that look at Alvin Kamara. You know, where did he go last year? Would it be nice to stash him, stash extra players, stash DJ Moore, stash Sterling Shepard in case Odell goes down? The list goes on and on. Calvin Ridley, if you wanted to stash a couple extra rookies, if, you know, Mike Williams, a second year player. I mean, you have a bunch of upside in the 10th round where you could use that as trade bait. You could obviously, you're going to draft someone in the first three rounds, like that's going to be potentially a bust. You're going to have someone that's going to get injured. Having more positional players, I've never seen anyone on a team be like, well, I really wish I didn't draft that guy that ended up blowing up.
And I guess it also depends on roster, you know, how many roster spots you have, how many starting running backs, you know, how many starting receivers, how many flex spots. Because if you can only start two running backs, two wide receivers, and one flex, it's only worth it so much to have a bunch of bench guys when you're not even be able to use them. At that point, it becomes, let's maximize the starting quarterback position because it's a starting position. We're going to need to have one every single week. So I don't think it's a terrible strategy, but again, I keep coming back to me, I could get on board with that if my last pick in the draft is going to be a Derek Carr, Eli Manning, you know, even a Jameis Winston, somebody like that. If it's going to be Mitch Trubisky or Case Keenum, for this argument's sake, if it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, Case Keenum, or Mitch Trubisky, I'm not doing that. I don't think it's worth it.
Yep. It's a bold idea. It's progressive. Hopefully someone out there will maybe, you know, take a chance, try it out. If you do, let us know how it works. I guarantee you this also happens because I've seen this happen in many times in leagues. You kind of wait on quarterbacks and other people see that you wait. So they're like, you know what? If this guy's going to wait, I'm going to go ahead and draft an extra quarterback. Well, good job for you, dude. Now you have three quarterbacks in a one quarterback league. You're screwing yourself over. That is likely to happen. And now two quarterback leagues. Seth, let's transition there. What's the approach there? What are we thinking? Very different animal.
Yep. And two quarterback leagues. My, you know, and again, all these strategies, you can only sometimes these things change based on the flow of the draft and what happens. But I usually go into a draft in a two quarterback league thinking, okay, I want one really good quarterback. And I'm content ending up with my second quarterback being the Mitch Trubisky, Tyrod Taylor. You know, last year it was Andy Dalton was my second quarterback. I had Drew Brees and Andy Dalton. And it didn't work out. I was struggling to find a replacement for Andy Dalton. I was sweating every single time I watched him play because it was stressful. So you want to have that one quarterback that can kind of hold it down for you. So when we look at two quarterback leagues and we look at the ADP for two quarterback leagues, you know, I think the range that you want to begin looking at taking your first quarterback is the third round to fifth round range, ideally third and fourth. In that range, you have Cam Newton, Breeze, Jimmy G, Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, Andrew Luck, Jared Goff, Big Ben. I think ideally you want one of those quarterbacks to be your number one quarterback. In other words, I don't want to have Alex Smith or Dak Prescott or Jameis Winston be my number one quarterback, because who's my second quarterback then? You know, unless you're taking two quarterbacks back to back. So you want to go in there with one quarterback that is a no doubter. It's going to show up every week, be consistent. And then worry about the second quarterback. You know, you can grab a couple late in the draft. I'm fine grabbing Eli and Andy Dalton and kind of comboing. Basically, you're treating your second quarterback as you would your first quarterback in a one quarterback league, if that makes sense.
Yep, and I really like the Cam Newton, Drew Brees in the third round. Early third round, they're going right now in two QB leagues, 3.02 and 3.04. It looks like it might be one of those like Travis Kelce scenarios where you're going to have an early third round pick to get them in that spot. Now, two QB leagues are very, very finicky, because unlike a one QB league where an ADP, it seems like there's, for the most part, a very rigid kind of scenario lane that most of these players are in. They're, you know, plus or minus their ADP up until, say, five or seven picks. Two QB leagues can be very volatile. So both of those quarterbacks could both go off in the second round and spark a quarterback frenzy. They could actually hang around till late fourth. That kind of stuff happens in two quarterback league much more often than it does in a standard one quarterback ADP draft, where everyone's been staring at ADPs and listening to podcasts and et cetera, and hammering down, getting this guy in early third and late fifth and et cetera. So make sure you understand that. I never like being in the middle or an end of a train, you know, like when you're picking players, a rally or whatever. I like to start those. So I like to be ahead of the curve. So if I could pick Cam Newton and then have a row of quarterbacks go, that'd be ideal. Always keep in mind how many people have one quarterback versus two while you're in the middle of drafting. I really like Drew Brees this year. Seth and I, we were just talking about it. He is a candidate for just a simple bounce back year. They had much more touchdowns rushing on the ground than any previous year. We all know that. We know they want to run the ball more, but just getting back to a mean, just an average of how many times they pass and throwing yards for Drew Brees, he's projecting right now in terms of my stat sheet as the third, right around the third overall QB. So I'm actually really happy drafting him at QB 5, 6, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Brees, and this is the question I want to ask, because I know you're a little higher on Drew Brees than me, but I think we're both on board with Brees having more of a bounce-back season in the sense of touchdown passes. He had 23 touchdowns last year. That is the lowest touchdown total he has had since he's been a member of the New Orleans Saints. The last time he had a lower touchdown total than 23 was 2003 when he was with San Diego. So you look at his yards per completion, it was the highest since 2011. He's still over 4,300 passing yards last year. All the numbers look good aside from the touchdowns. So Do you think he has a chance to get back into the 30-plus touchdown area?
I don't see how he doesn't. They bring in Cameron Meredith, who is projected to play in the slot, who's going to be an upgrade over Brandon Coleman. They have, obviously, Michael Thomas there. They have their running backs. If anything, you know, their first four games, it might be a little bit more lenient on the pass because they don't have Mark Ingram. And they drafted another rookie wide receiver to play on the outside. He may or may not start at the beginning of the year. Probably not. Not win the starting job. But tell me if these numbers seem pretty accurate in terms of what Drew Brees has historically done. You said he had kind of a bad year last year, but he still threw for 4,300 yards. I got him at 4,700 yards and 31.8 touchdowns. Just about no rushing, 50 yards, and maybe one touchdown on the ground on a sneak. That puts him at 302 league points projected on a 4 points for passing touchdown and two for interceptions. You know, you look at those numbers, you say that's an easy job for Drew Brees just to get back to his norm.
Yeah, I mean, his yards were down big time last season for his standards, and this is a guy that threw for over 5,200 yards in 2016, down to 4,334. So I think the fact that he regressed basically 1,000 yards last year is a little bit of an aberration. I think 4,700 is very realistic. I think that might even be on the conservative end. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to see him get up close to 5,000 at least with 30 touchdowns. So, I was watching some of those games because I own Drew Brees, and there were a bunch of instances where they were inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5-yard line, and when they, in years past, would do a play action and dump off for a touchdown, they would just run the ball in. Nobody could stop them. It was just, it got kind of silly with the things that Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram were doing.
Yeah, let's remember, too, last year was the first year he didn't pass for 600 pass attempts since 2009, when he only played 15 games, okay? And he also had one of his lowest touchdown rate on the year since 2000 and looks like 2007. So you just put him back to his normal touchdown rate of 5.3% on 600 pass attempts, you're at 32 touchdowns. So I think that this is pretty easy to look at, and everyone should be definitely back on the Drew Brees bandwagon for sure. Now, there's a big thing, too, Seth, with 4 points for passing touchdown and 6 points. Big difference, obviously, lean towards the people who pass a lot more touchdowns. Typically, most people play in the 4 points for passing touchdown leagues. That puts a lot more emphasis on your scrambling-type quarterbacks, your Cam Newtons, Deshaun Watsons of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Russell Wilson, even some of like a Marcus Mariota. They just become a little more valuable. I mean, I think in general, like you're not going to take a Marcus Mariota over a Drew Brees, but I think then if all things are equal, you go with a quarterback that can rush. I mean, I try not to get too sucked into rushing yards with quarterbacks. I just try and just go for the best quarterback, someone who's going to throw more touchdowns. Even if it is 4 points per touchdown, you still want someone who's going to throw for touchdowns. I don't want to have to depend on the rushing yards because they are kind of, you know, scattered and can be kind of fluky, especially the rushing touchdowns for quarterbacks. But they are more valuable, especially the quarterbacks who also throw for a lot of touchdowns, like Russell Wilson, who led the NFL in touchdown passes. It just elevates his stock even more.
Yep. So our idea with the quarterback strategy is wait till at least the 10th round in one QB leagues, and then with two QB leagues, you want to wait till the third round. Try and grab as many studs as you can. Even if there's a run in, say, late first, early second round, that means that's just pushing down more studs to you. But typically, we're going to start around the Cam Newton area, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, start of early third round in two QB leagues. And then from there, you want to see how the draft evolves. I've gotten two stud QBs before because it made sense. And we're very comfortable having our second QB be a Mitch Trubisky or someone along those lines, you know, as your second QB, because you have that stud that you can rely on.
Yeah. Again, just treat your second quarterback if you want like you would your quarterback in a one quarterback league, but you want to get that one quarterback that can kind of anchor your quarterback tandem, because there's nothing worse and nothing more dangerous in a two quarterback league than entering the year with, say, an Andy Dalton and Ryan Tannehill. And then what happens when you have bye weeks, you know, injuries, you know, even aside from bye weeks, and even if they're both healthy, you're going to have weeks when they're both very sketchy because they're both inconsistent, which is why it's so important to have at least one quarterback that's basically matchup proof week in and week out.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to tight end strategy, Seth. Tight ends. We talked a little bit about this in the previous episode in terms of the early rounds, but our focus is we're going to basically not focus on Gronk unless he ends up in the third round, middle to wherever we feel comfortable. But our goal is to get one of the stud tight ends if we can. If not, we're going to look much later. Go ahead and jump into that.
Yeah, and our strategy is kind of based on the assumption that we're not going to get Gronk. Usually, I love the idea of getting Gronk. I love the idea every year. It's just there's always somebody that likes him a little bit more than me or values him more than I do. So we're going to base it on under the assumption that we miss out on Gronk. So now we're in a situation where we need to grab Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz, right? We talked about Travis Kelce in the fourth round. His ADP right now is around early fourth round. So getting Travis Kelce, you know, even if it means reaching a little bit on him to get him, and if you strike out on Travis Kelce, if someone takes him the pick before you and you can't get him, then go and get Ertz the next round. Because the drop-off after Travis Kelce and Ertz is substantial. You're looking at the Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, Evan Ingram, Kyle Rudolph. And we're just in each of them for a different reason, but we're not a big fan of that grouping. And then it falls off completely. So if you can't get Travis Kelce and then you don't get Zach Ertz the round after, we're basically waiting until you get to that range where you have, you know, Trey Burton, Jack Doyle, George Kittle, David Njoku, so on and so forth.
Yep, we're skipping the...
Oh, and I'm sorry, I was looking at... That was on the two quarterback setting. So Travis Kelce is the third round, and Zach Ertz being the fourth round.
Yep, okay. I mean...
Just had to make that correction.
How many times have you done a mock draft or best ball? You mentioned it earlier, and your team just looks so much better with that stud tight end. So that's one of the benefits of getting that late first, that seventh overall pick. You could still get your two studs in the first and second round, then grab Travis Kelce. Now all of a sudden you got a stud running back, stud wide receiver, stud tight end. Let's rock and roll. That's probably my favorite way to start the draft. If all possible, that's my ideal situation. After Ertz, that said there's a huge drop-off. We're skipping Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, Evan Ingram, Kyle Rudolph, and Delaney Walker. They're not the other tier. What happens here is just the studs kind of go, and these people are definitely a little bit better than the previous ones, but there's always these tight ends that kind of come out of nowhere and perform relatively close to the upper echelon and being a top five tight end, the replacement level basically for an Evan Ingram and someone that is going to emerge, and hopefully you get that person, is not great. But Seth, I want to take a couple of minutes and explain at least a little bit some of the reasons why we didn't love these tight ends, starting off with Jimmy Graham. Green Bay, to me, has not been able to showcase themselves as a consistent tight end target type of team. Last year, Martellus Bennett only had around 33 catches, I believe, and the previous year before that, they had both Martellus Bennett as well, and they also had Jared Cook and Richard Rodgers. They both combined for 60 catches. Jimmy Graham had around 50-something catches last year. I feel like that's kind of the area to expect for him. And if you start expecting like just 60 catches and a complete hit or miss week in and week out on touchdowns, that's not a reason to take Jimmy Graham where he's going right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think Jimmy Graham is going to be inconsistent, which is my biggest thing. And then Greg Olsen, obviously, he's coming off. He played seven games last year. He's 32 years or 33 years old. Christian McCaffrey, I think, is going to be a factor in terms of eating into Greg Olsen's production in the passing game, because Greg Olsen's never been a guy that's going to catch more than six touchdowns. You really have to rely on him catching over 70, 80 catches, and I don't think that's going to happen with his age and with, you know, players like Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore getting more looks.
And am I crazy? Like, we're looking at this ADP, and he's going 5'11", 5.11, and it's like as if he didn't get hurt last year and he didn't play terribly. Never minding the age, if he had a really good year last year, he's typically in the 4-5 range for fifth round. This is, he's at the bottom of the fifth round, but it's as if he didn't have a whole disappearing act last year.
Yeah, and I want to say one more thing on Travis Kelce, because not only is Travis Kelce the second best tight end, and it's so important to lock that position down if you can get somebody like Kelce, but he puts up wide receiver numbers. You have Stephon Diggs going ahead of Kelce, and granted, part of Stephon Diggs' problem is he doesn't play a full 16 games, so his numbers are a little skewed. But with Travis Kelce, for example, he's had over 80 catches each of the last two seasons, over 1,000 yards each of the last two seasons, last year career high with 8 touchdowns. But when you look at the 80-plus receptions, 1,000-plus receiving yards, those are wide receiver numbers. Stephon Diggs has yet to eclipse 1,000 yards receiving, and he's only had over 80 catches once in his career. You look at players that have played all 16 games consistently, like Doug Baldwin, who's going kind of right after Travis Kelce in that range. He's only had over 80 catches once in his career. That was 2016. And he's had over 1,000 yards only twice. So his numbers, a lot of these receivers, even somebody like a Mike Evans, who's going a full round almost ahead of Travis Kelce, he's only been over 80 catches once, right? And his touchdowns have been low two out of the last three seasons. So Travis Kelce's numbers, take position out of it. If you just stacked up his numbers next to Mike Evans, Doug Baldwin, Stephon Diggs, they're very comparable, and in some cases they're better. And he's the tight end. You can only start one, and there's a massive drop-off. So I just think the urgency, and this goes for me too, when I do my drafts, I haven't been taking Travis Kelce as seriously as I should have. There has to be more urgency when you're in the third round. From the very first pick in the third round, Travis Kelce should be on the table.
Okay, sold. You got me. Yeah, Travis Kelce is a definitely high target of ours and will keep coming up in conversations. The next person, Seth, that's coming off the board is a tight end that we're kind of skipping in this range is Evan Engram. My big thing with Evan Engram is, you know, everything kind of broke his way last year. He was able to play the entire season, which was great. He had over 770 snaps that he was able to play. Odell Beckham only played 4 games. Sterling Shepard only played 11 games. Both of those come back, hopefully healthy, ready to go. Sterling Shepard was already playing in the first preseason game. You got Saquon Barkley, who's going to demand a lot of attention, both on the ground and through the air. I think that there was no one else to throw the ball to last year, and I don't think he's going to have a terrible year, but it's kind of like Jimmy Graham. I think it's going to be a little bit inconsistent, and there's no reason to pay a premium on where you're getting him, considering everyone else that's being drafted around him.
Yeah, and I think he's a tight end that I don't hate him. I'm not looking to avoid him at all costs, but I'm also not going out of my way to target him, and he probably won't end up on a ton of my teams. He is going in that range where you have a lot of players that we're not big fans of. You have Michael Crabtree right around there. You have Sammy Watkins, Sonny Michel, Kerryon Johnson. I think a lot of times I'm going to go with the running back there. But I could make it, depending on how it breaks when you're in the draft, I could see a scenario in which I end up with Evan Engram. But again, just, you know, not a huge fan for the reasons that you outlined.
Next one was Delanie Walker. You know, Delanie Walker is interesting because they have the new offense there. So you could say, well, the offense is going to get better. Maybe his touchdowns will bounce back a little bit. He only had 3 touchdowns last year. He's still been able to manage over 100 targets 4 years in a row. His yards per catch went down a little bit. I think that's going to be probably very indicative of just watching Antonio Gates' career in terms of still getting a lot of targets, being fairly productive. But, you know, 74 for 800 yards and 3 touchdowns, especially if you're in a standard league, I mean, there's nothing fancy there, nothing really special about that. So, again, going back to the replacement level, you know, assuming he still gets 70-ish receptions, he's only had 1,000 yards one time in his career. So I can't expect that. And, of course, with his age, he's going to be 34 this year.
On Sunday. He turns 34 on Sunday.
Turns 34 on Sunday.
Happy early birthday to Delanie Walker.
There you go. So I expect, you know, good production, kind of steady, maybe the exact opposite of the last two, getting consistent 6-7 targets per game, but not a ton of yards, and probably max out at maybe 5-ish touchdowns on the season, which, again, is pretty replaceable.
Very replaceable, and I'm also, this is at the point of the draft, seventh round-ish, where I'm just not motivated to pull the trigger and grab Delanie Walker. I want to grab a player with more upside at either, you know, the running back or wide receiver position. And I'm very content waiting for that reason.
Then the next one is Kyle Rudolph. Kyle Rudolph, another interesting one. You know, he had that one big year a couple years ago. He was number one in terms of snaps for wide receivers last year. He's always going to be on the field, which is definitely nice. But last year, we saw his targets dip down dramatically to only 81 targets. He's only had one season of over 100 targets, and it was in 2016 when he had 132 targets. Now that Thielen and Diggs have both emerged, he hasn't eclipsed 600 yards except for once. His touchdowns are still good, but there's no reason why he should go there. Unless for some reason Kirk Cousins really latches on and starts giving him a larger target share that he just hasn't gotten, because he's on the field for literally almost every single snap. He's got a really good catch rate, but he stays in line to block a lot more than some of these other tight ends. So that's an important factor, and Minnesota's going to have the lead a lot of times, and they're going to be running the ball a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're a Kyle Rudolph fan this year, you're really banking on Kirk Cousins coming in and giving him a dramatic boost. And Kirk Cousins has been really good for tight ends in Washington. When we see him, the touchdowns, when healthy, what Jordan Reed has done, what Vernon Davis did filling in for Jordan Reed. But unless there's a dramatic improvement, it's kind of hard to get too excited about Kyle Rudolph. I do like him more than Delanie Walker and Evan Ingram. I think he's safer than Evan Ingram. He'll be more consistent on a week in and week out basis, and he's got more upside than Delanie Walker, given his age, his size, and the offense that he's in. So I like him better than Evan Ingram or Delanie Walker, but he's still in that end of the sixth round range where I'm probably going to be taking somebody else. There's going to be someone that grabs him before me. I'm not going to be motivated to pull the trigger and grab Delanie Walker over somebody that has more upside at another position.
All right. I agree there. So that's kind of like the early middle of the round players I wanted us to quickly discuss, because we're kind of skipping right over them and we're saying go to the next group of people. Start looking in the close to the 10th round. You're going to find someone that has similar production. This might be a year where if you grab one maybe in the 10th round, maybe you grab one in the 16th round right before you grab your kicker and your defense as a second option, just to kind of be a little bit safer as you go into the season. And Seth, that brings me to transitioning to bench strategy. Typically, most benches probably have 6 people on the bench, maybe 7. So let's keep that in mind. What is your focus as you kind of round out your starting lineup and you start looking at certain people to put on your bench?
I think the first thing is, you know, I think one of the mistakes a lot of fantasy owners make is they think I need to fill out my starting lineup, right? And then I'm going to work on my bench. Because we have the best available player philosophy pretty much through the entire draft, I'm fine having 3 people on my bench and still not having a couple starting spots filled, whether it's quarterback, tight end, whatever. But the other thing is I generally like to take like a 50-50 approach where 50% of my bench are players that have that may not be great, that I may not feel comfortable starting week one if I had to, but I know that they're going to pay dividends or have the potential to pay dividends down the road. you know, players like rookies, for example, would fit that bill, or a player that might be out for the first few weeks, like a Julian Edelman. And then 50% of my bench being players that are starters, you know, maybe for wide receivers, probably a number one or wide or two receiver, someone that's going to be on the field in three wide receiver sets, somebody that
like a Sterling Shepard in the 10th round,
like
maybe
like a Sterling Shepard, like a Kenny Stills, you know, who's going in the 14th round, somebody like him,
maybe
somebody
a Keelan Cole,
you know, some of this, and Keelan Cole could also kind of fit into the other category too. You know, I think Kenny Stills is a really good example because he's not going to excite anybody. You're getting him really late, but he's somebody that if you have a bye week or have an injury, if you had to start him, he's not going to get you 0 points. Whereas week one, Calvin Ridley could. So I think half should be high upside players that could blow up, players that you want to grab in the draft before you're in a position, if you miss on them, they blow up and they're on the waiver wire and everyone's going after them. And then half your bench are the Pierre Garçons, the Kenny Stills, Isaiah Crowells, the C.J. Andersons, players that you know are going to get touches.
Yep, perfect. And if you are in a one quarterback league, then you don't want a backup quarterback on your bench. Do not do that mistake. Are you okay if you get a late round tight end, adding in that extra tight end on your team?
Absolutely. I've been doing that a lot with, and I know it's been best ball, so we're not really worried about, bench or starters per se. But if you miss out on those tight ends that we talked about, and let's say your number one tight end is a Jack Doyle or David Njoku, I'm perfectly fine also grabbing, you know, a Vance McDonald or an Austin Seferian Jenkins or
Tyler Eifert.
Or a Tyler Eifert, yeah. You know, that way you're casting a little bit wider of a net, knowing that you don't have one guy who's a guarantee, so you're getting two guys, and hopefully one of them, you know, you can start one of them on a week in and week out basis.
All right, let me try and quickly recap this very concise. Quarterbacks, we are going to wait till at least the 10th round-ish, looking for that Philip Rivers-style person. If you want to wait even longer and be bolder, hey, might be worth a shot. I think that's kind of where fantasy and one quarterback leagues are keep kind of trending towards. It used to be wait till the 6th, 7th round. Now we're at 9th, 10th, 11th round. I think you could even wait even longer. This is the most deepest year for quarterbacks there is. Two quarterback leagues, we definitely want to try and get a really good person, a stud. I don't think we're ever going to, you know, turn anyone away from saying, oh, I really want to get Rodgers and I can get him with pick, you know, 110, or I really want to get Russell Wilson in the 2nd round or something along those lines. That's fine. You know, I think our approach is going to be start looking in the early 3rd. There still should be a stud available there, starting with around the Cam Newton, Drew Brees. If I was in the early 3rd, I had 3.01, I would look at it like this. In a 4-point for passing touchdown league, I probably would lean towards Newton, the rushing touchdowns. In a 6-point for passing touchdown league, I would lean towards Drew Brees, for example. I'm sure we're going to continue talking about quarterbacks. That's the strategy with quarterbacks. Tight ends, we want to get Kelce and Ertz. If Gronk falls to the middle part of the 3rd round, then perfect. He obviously falls in that category. Otherwise, we're going to wait till the 10th plus round for tight ends and maybe gobble up two of them. And then with benches, we're trying to go half upside, half plug and play kind of guys that will fill up the rest of our roster. And it's okay if you're sitting in the 8th round, you have your full starting roster, you don't have your tight end, to just continue drafting more positional players. You don't have to fill out your roster necessarily. Go best available players, especially at that part of the draft. Miss anything there, Seth?
No, that's a pretty impressive job of recapping.
I guess I was paying attention. All right, everyone, that is part 2 of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Draft Series Special, and we will be back with part 3.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that 3 times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowe. We'll catch you next time.